Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Today on the show, if the world situation seems complicated right now, David Sanger from the New York Times has a way to explain it. His new book is called New Cold Wars, and it's his take on how we got from the end of the old Cold War around 1990 to where we are today. In 1990, if you've lived long enough, you know, most Western leaders thought the future would be global democracy and global economic growth. They thought Russia was done with empire building when the Soviet Union collapsed, that China mostly wanted to integrate with the West through free trade that would lift all boats, that the emerging new thing called the internet would democratize information and therefore make authoritarianism harder to maintain, and that even the Israelis and Palestinians would realize that their forever war was benefiting neither of them and figure out a way to coexist. But where are we today? Information and disinformation chaos online, right? The resurgence of nationalism and authoritarianism on every continent. Global trade seen as a failure for the middle class, at least in this country, and a growing alliance between Putin, Xi Jinping, and the leaders of Iran. The old Cold War is over, but the new world order that the West thought would emerge is instead giving way to what David Sanger calls new Cold Wars. And the 21st century version of the question, how much will leaders everywhere have the wisdom and restraint to keep them from getting nuclear hot? David Sanger coming up with that big think analysis and to take your calls later in the show. Also, your calls on who you track on your phone and who tracks you, right? Parents and teenagers, spouses and lovers, old college roommates, maybe even work colleagues. This is for you. Where's the line between safety and surveillance? When does closeness become creepiness, when you can always see exactly where the people in your life are or when they can see you? But we'll start with a more local and granular and everyday kind of turf war than the ones David Sanger is writing about. It's the turf war between delivery app companies, the delivery workers, and the restaurants that deliver through them in New York City. There was recently a wage increase law that took effect for the delivery workers, some of you know, but if you're the customer in this equation, maybe you've noticed that on some of the apps, it's becoming harder to tip. You have to look harder to find the tipping buttons, or the suggested tipping percentages have gone down, or you can only tip after delivery, not when you order, which makes tipping at all less likely. Delivery worker advocates say it's a form of retaliation for the higher wage law. The apps claim the law is causing restaurants to lose money and lay off employees. We'll get several views and take your calls. City Council member Sean Abreu is the sponsor of a bill to require the tipping be clear and easily seen at the point of checkout. He's also proposing, if I'm reading this right, a required minimum tip of 10%. New York City Councilmember Sean Abreu joins us now. His Manhattan district runs from the Upper West Side to Washington Heights. Councilmember, welcome.
Hey, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Always good to have you on. And also with us, Lahia Hualpa, Executive Director of the Workers Justice Project, which represents delivery workers. Ms. Hualpa, welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, thank you for having me as well.
And we will also hear in a few minutes, folks, from a restaurant owner who was referred to us by DoorDash, who says his Queens-based business is being badly hurt by the new wage standards. Councilmember, would you remind us first about the recent wage hike law? I read that it brought the required wage to just under $20 an hour. Tell me if that's right and what exactly changed and when.
So when the minimum wage went into effect, the apps retaliated by removing the tipping option at checkout. And just to make very clear, deliveristas make $20 an hour for active time worked. That's the moment during which the order is picked up from the restaurant and the moment that's delivered to someone's door. That's the only time a deliverista is making minimum wage. The time that they spent waiting for an order, which is referred to as call time, those resources get pulled among all deliveristas, but it's never to the amount or I wouldn't want to say never, but it's almost never at the amount of a minimum wage. So on balance, deliveristas are actually not making a minimum wage an hour, only when that delivery is being made.
Can I jump in on that detail, Ms. Hualpa? How do the restaurants or the apps keep track of the exact minutes when a delivery worker is moving from the restaurant to somebody's home? I mean, are they clocking in and out at that granular level in some way?
Yeah, absolutely. What we have seen is the apps continue to be less transparent with workers, but also forcing workers to lose their flexibility by moving into a scheduling system, which is another tactic to limit the flexibility of workers who continue to be independent contractors and food delivery companies who continue to be less transparent about how workers are scheduling hours, but also how workers are being paid for the time that they're actively working.
But I'm curious, I'm sure listeners are curious, just how that works. Does a delivery worker at the point when they leave the restaurant click a button on an app to say, I'm on the clock now because I'm in transit or something like that?
Yeah, what we're seeing app delivery companies do is forcing workers to a scheduling system where workers are forced to schedule X number of hours without guarantee of actual work. So what we're seeing is app delivery companies being less transparent, forcing workers into scheduling systems, tracking workers where they are, but at the same time, limiting workers' flexibility, which directly impacts the income of app delivery companies, app delivery workers.
And Councilmember Abreu, where does the tipping come in?
So the tipping comes in terms of a broader equity issue. We believe very strongly that consumers should be able to tip how much they want and as ever frequently as they want. So that's why we have two bills, right? One bill would establish tipping at checkout and not tipping. That option will no longer, our goal is so that that tipping option will no longer be available after the delivery is ordered, right? No one is going to tip once their food has arrived, once their apps are closed, or once they are chowing down on their food.
I'm going to ask you a pushback question about that we're already getting a text message about from a listener, but we'll hold that for a second. Keep going with your answer.
And anyone who has ordered on these apps can tell you that they'll reopen the apps weeks later to order again, only to see the tip menu from their order weeks ago. So what apps like DoorDash and Uber has done is to disincentivize and discourage tipping, you know, altogether.
How?
By people are more inclined to tip at checkout than they are inclined to tip
After the wage increase took effect that they moved tipping from point of checkout to after delivery?
That's correct. In fact, Grubhub still has it at checkout. But DoorDash and Uber, they removed it from checkout. And it's hurting deliveristas who depend on this for their livelihoods. With respect to the second bill, I would also like to say is a suggested minimum donation of 10%.
It's not required. Okay, I've seen it reported in the press as required. So I'm glad you're clearing that up.
Yeah, it's required that the option be presented, but consumers are not mandated to tip at all.
Thank you for clearing that up. So, Ms. Hualpa, why would the app companies like DoorDash or Uber benefit from the drivers getting fewer tips? Don't the company's profits only come from a percentage of the base order?
So it is important to understand here, part of the norm before minimum wage law implementation, the big delivery companies didn't have an issue about having the tipping option when you started to order the food. And removing the tipping really started right after minimum wage implementation as a way to continue to discourage consumers to tip, but also as a tactic to intentionally hurt workers, because now the companies have to pay the active time, which is meaning the time that most workers are actually working.
But is there any financial benefit to the apps, to DoorDash and Uber in particular? I think those are the two you're singling out, the delivery workers getting lower tips?
Of course. One of the things is the adding a tipping option doesn't impact financially, nor to the business, nor to the company. I think let's start there. And then tipping really is, as it was mentioned by the council member, it's a voluntary contribution of the consumer, and it actually increases worker satisfaction and ability and recognition for the work that they do in the city of New York. It has been part of the norm in the industry for many years now. And what we want to make sure is we continue with that tradition that has been part of New York City's fabric. Tipping, we tip at our restaurants, we tip in many places. So tipping to delivery workers should be part of the norm as the same in other industries. And it should be a way to continue to recognize the labor of workers who do essential work for the city of New York.
So listeners, help us report this story, and you can share your opinions too. And if you are in any role in the delivery economy, tell us your story. Are you a delivery worker listening right now? What's been happening since your official minimum wage went up? Have your tips gone down? Are you making more money or the same or less than before? How do you get paid for your time? 212-433-WNYC. If you're a customer who orders for delivery, is your ordering behavior or your tipping behavior changing since the minimum wage went up? Would you even know that happened if I didn't say it, that the minimum wage went up? Have you noticed that it's become more inconvenient to tip on any of the apps in particular, or that it's only available after delivery, whereas it used to be at the point of checkout as well? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or if you're a restaurant owner, and we're going to hear from one in a minute, or an employee, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So Councilmember Breo, here's a pushback question, and I'm expanding on a comment from a listener by text message. One could argue that tipping really only belongs at the point after service is delivered. Lujia just mentioned restaurants. Well, you don't tip your server in a restaurant when they take your order at your table, only after the meal when the customer decides how much of a tip they deserve or want to give. When you take an Uber, after the ride is completed, not before, the app asks you to rate the driver 1 to 5 and determine your tip. So why shouldn't tipping delivery workers be done in the traditional way after the service is performed and with some variation depending on, the variation is still there depending on the quality of the service, but after the service is performed?
I have no reason to believe that a deliverista will not do its job. I can count on my hand after hundreds of deliveries how many times an order has never been delivered to my house. I mean, maybe twice or three times. I know deliveristas are going to make the orders to my apartment. Deliveristas would even drive 3 miles to bring someone a French toast, right? I don't need to have it after the service has been delivered. We know deliveristas are going to take their food to your door under the most severe conditions. So for me, it doesn't really make a difference. And I think for a lot of consumers, it really doesn't make a difference.
Ms. Walpa, do you want to get in on that? Do you want to expand on that answer at all, add to it?
Well, I think the unique difference between other workers is that deliveristas are not workers. They're considered independent contractors. Let's start there. And what that means for a deliverista is that the current minimum pay, for the most part, most only covers from the time that they're actively working. So that means that if a worker is not guaranteed and is not doing orders, especially now that the low season is coming, which is the summer, most workers depend on tipping to being able to complement and make a living wage. And then the second I would say, tipping also kind of allows deliveristas to make a financial decision whether it is worth to travel 3-4 miles to make that delivery. The second thing is, when a deliverista accepts your order for most of the time, it's guaranteed and by the company's rule, it's kind of like deliveristas are mandated to make that delivery. And the other one is, part of the tradition to guarantee and ensure that workers are recognized. And the best way to recognize workers is by tipping. It's part of New York City's tradition.
Let's take one phone call before we bring in a restaurant owner from Queens who's going to give us a whole other story than we've been hearing from you, or a whole other argument. Chris in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Brian. It's Chris Carthy from Armonk. You know, I've been thinking about this tipping model for quite a bit. I go into my local coffee shop in the morning, for example, and there's a tip option. You know, the problem with tipping is that it's discretionary. Some people are tipping, some people aren't. And the wage rate fluctuates for the barista or for the delivery guy. I don't understand why the model isn't different. You implement a service fee. Essentially, this is a service rendered. There is a contractual agreement to pay for that service, and that money then is used to pay a livable wage.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Chris. And Ms. Walpa, for you representing delivery workers, I realize this would take an even bigger change than the council member's bill is proposing, but would you prefer, in theory, to go to a no tipping but a delivery fee that gets paid to the delivery worker system? I know they debate this in restaurants too, right? Is it better to move? Some restaurants are experimenting with no tipping, but a service charge that's transparent. Would you like that?
We all want more transparency, and let's have a bigger conversation about what we're dealing with. We're dealing with multi-billion dollar corporations who charges a fee to the restaurant, who charges a fee to the consumer, and who gets to keep that fee? For the most part, the companies. What we're asking here and what we have been fighting is with the minimum pay transparency is ensuring workers get the ability to earn a living wage. And we did that by guaranteeing this year, 1956. But the conversation about tipping is that 1956 is not enough in the city of New York, not enough for independent contractors who have a high operating cost, and not enough workers who are not guaranteed enough hours, and workers who are not entirely guaranteed all connected time. So we have workers who might be connected 5-6 hours, but necessarily that doesn't mean that worker will be paid for those 5-6 hours. So tipping allows to complement the workers' income where they don't have enough work, or when they're not being paid for all the connected time as well. So what we're asking here for the city of New York is let's bring more pay transparency. Let's for the companies to disclose the tipping, to make it available and optional to consumers at the end of the day, consumer's choice to tip or not. Let's make that option available to consumers, and let's make them decide whether they want to tip.
Also with us now is a restaurant owner from Queens who DoorDash arranged for us to speak to represent restaurant owners and by extension the apps. Shuai Zhang owns Pup Rice, a modern Chinese takeout restaurant that started with one location in Kew Gardens in 2020. Has since expanded to 3 spots across Brooklyn and Queens, and was also selected this year as a vendor for the Citi Field Taste of Queens lineup, as it's called, for the Mets 2024 season. Shuai, thanks very much for joining us. I'll be going to a game in a few weeks, and I'll look for your food at Citi Field. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Are you seeing an impact on your business from the new minimum wage for delivery workers?
Oh, yeah. We had 3 restaurants last year, and since September, our delivery revenue has down more than 50%, and we had to shut down 2 other locations. We were having a team of 25, including our own delivery drivers, a team of 25 employees, and now we have only 4 left.
We have a number of people calling or texting to ask this question. And since you just kind of brought up that topic, I'm going to go right there first. Listener writes, what is the advantage of restaurants joining a delivery app? We order only from restaurants that hire their own delivery personnel so that we know that the delivery person actually receives the tip. I think, Shwaya, I heard you just say that you used to hire your own delivery people. Why don't you do that? Why don't a lot of restaurants do that rather than use the apps?
Actually, we had our own delivery drivers using the app. The third-party delivery apps provide that option that we could use our own delivery drivers. But I see this service, this technology, the third-party delivery app, is a great way to manage the entire delivery process. And also, it's a great tool for us to reach out to our customers.
Explain from your perspective why this increase to $20 an hour for delivery workers would have had such a deleterious effect on your business. A lot of listeners might say, well, $20 an hour isn't that much, and it's not that much more than they were making before. How could it be that it's cost you 50% of your delivery business or to close some of your locations?
I think it's a 1-2 punch. This is a really bad timing to implement such change because the overall economy is also bad at this time. If they implement this change during 2022 or maybe 2021 when the delivery service was hottest, it wouldn't be this bad. But this is just one part of the problem. Another big part of the problem is this new bill the city presented is not really built for the delivery business model because I give you an example. $20, my own delivery workers, they were making more than $20 an hour on average, including tips on a daily basis. It's because they know how to deliver efficiently, and they treat this business as their own business. So they grab the food, they make sure their customer is happy so they can get more tips in return. They never think about, you know, counting their time when they do delivery. They always try their best to deliver as fast as possible. But right now, since they are paid hourly, they are paid on clock, that means the speed of the delivery is not their first priority anymore because they come here to they want to make money.
And you know, the DoorDash publicist who referred us to you said something similar. Because of the changes to how workers are compensated, you're having trouble getting delivery workers to take orders due to a lack of incentive, the publicist said. And I don't understand that one. Wouldn't a higher wage for the time that they're actually in transit give them more incentive to work, to take more orders?
Only when they start the process, they have the incentive. But not they are trying to get more orders done in a short period of time. Customers pay more fees, so most of the customers, they cut down their tips anymore. They don't pay tips anymore, or they cut down their tips to maybe a dollar back. We have seen that.
So maybe it's in your interest, too, for the tips to be maximized under the bill that the council member is proposing, or the availability of tipping to be maximized. Do you agree or disagree?
Actually, I don't want to comment on that because I'm not a policy maker. I don't know. I agree with the city what they're trying to do. They want to provide a better life for the delivery drivers. There are many other ways, but I'm speaking the fact that the delivery, we're seeing less delivery orders. Customers are paying more money for delivery food, and we're seeing less delivery drivers coming here to pick up the food. Some of the food stayed in restaurant with for a delivery driver for 20, 30 minutes, and the food will be cold once it's delivered to the customer, and the customer obviously not going to be happy, and they'll pay even less tips. Yeah, right.
Because the price went up. Well, how much do you say you've had to raise prices for the dishes at your restaurant that are being delivered that you'd say is because of the delivery workers now making $20 an hour? How much have you had to raise prices?
Oh, we lowered our price to combat this. If we increase our price, we are pushing even more customers away from us, from ordering from us. So, and the fact is, two of my workers right now working in my restaurant as a cook, they were our delivery drivers, and they all say that they're making less money per day than before.
Councilmember Abreu, would you like to ask our guest, the restaurant owner from Queens, Shuai Zhang, any question?
Sure. I mean, I'm curious to know whether or not he thinks that apps are squeezing out restaurants, because it seems as though that apps can get up to 20% per order. Is there room here for the apps to get less of a share here in order to make it easier on their business?
That would be great. But we have built a system for this 20%. I think there's a gap right now in the city since COVID, and it works for us because we especially have this delivery system built for that 20%. And we can still make around 10% of profit after all. And I believe not only they take a 20% cut, but they save us a lot of management labor. And also they help us with marketing. And for my first location, we are in a stream mall that during COVID, there's no office anymore in the building. And even right now, only 30% of office operational in the building. So we don't have any food traffic in that location anymore. Without using delivery platform, without attracting customers further away from the location, we wouldn't have this business at all.
Ryan, can I ask another question?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, my other question is, my understanding is that there has been a decline in orders because we have been coming out of the pandemic. Have you seen a downward trends of orders coming your way before minimum wage came into effect?
No. It starts, I think last year, summertime was slow because of the summer. Every summer is slow for us. And September, everybody come back to work, students come back to school, we see a big increase during September. And October is where we hit by the increase. And compared to the year before, we lost more than 50% of the deliveries sales.
Ms. Walpa, do you want to engage at all with Shuai? I mean, we have two presumably sympathetic populations here, the delivery workers and small restaurant owners like him.
Yeah, I think, you know, I just wanted to, first of all, appreciate his own experience sharing, because at the end of the day, deliveristas in restaurants, are actually in the business to support each other. Something that I want to ask him is about, if there is a fee cap, if they feel that the delivery fees charged by the companies have increased because of the minimum pay. Has he seen that?
Shuai, you get the question?
I'm sorry, I lost a little bit. What was the question? Can you please?
If you feel that the delivery companies are charging you more fees for the service they provide you because of the minimum pay increase.
And I do have a text from a listener here too that says, as someone who orders maybe once a week, I've noticed a continual increase in fees, and that's separate from the tipping. But Shuai, go ahead.
I don't think delivery platform charge us more money, more fees. They charge the, they pass the fees to customers.
Right.
They charge more fees from the customer, and but we lost customer because they don't have money, extra money to spend on delivery. Delivery has become a luxury for them.
Would you rather see the apps disappear as a restaurant owner?
Before I opened my restaurant, early in my restaurant career, I actually managed my own delivery team for a Chinese, local Chinese restaurant. We were doing everything on our own. And I can tell you that the management for that aspect is really, really difficult. And there are a lot of liabilities involved. I don't want to go back to that age. I think there has to be a way that we can utilize technology to make the process smoother and better.
So they are performing a service for your restaurant. Shuai Zhang owns, tell me if I say it right, Pop Rice?
Yeah.
A modern Chinese
Pop Rice
takeout restaurant that started in Kew Gardens. You're still in Kew Gardens?
Yeah, this is our first location and right now our only location.
And if I go to a Mets game, where can I find you at Citi Field?
We are next to the Shake Shack. You can see a taste of Queens Pop Rice.
Everybody knows where the Shake Shack is. Thank you for joining us. And
thank you.
Before we flip topics here, councilman, any new common ground that might emerge out of that that's in everybody's interest?
Not really. I don't think we should be scapegoating deliveristas to begin with. If consumers are seeing this as an increased cost on ordering food, consumers have the option to not tip at all. And if it's within your means to tip, even after realizing what the cost of food is, then by any means you can still tip. I also want to make clear again that the apps have the power here. And restaurants as well. The apps are squeezing our restaurants, and they have it within their powers to make sure that that cap, they're not charging restaurants up to the 20% cap to make it easier on our restaurants. Also, when the minimum wage went into effect, there were fees that were passed on to customers. So the customers are paying for the minimum wage. So how is it that the minimum wage is impacting restaurants? It just doesn't make any sense. Customers are the ones bearing the cost for that. And if customers want to and consumers want to bear the cost for tipping, we want to make that option available to them. I also want to make clear that deliveristas aren't making the minimum wage for every time that they're working. If it's active time worked, yes, they get minimum wage from the moment they drop off the delivery. Sorry, from the moment they pick up the delivery to the moment they drop it off. But the time that they spend waiting to get orders, that's not getting minimum wage. Those are resources that are being pulled among all deliveristas for call time. And we want transparency. Why is it that some deliveristas are making more and others making less? That goes back to our transparency issues that we also are working on in the city council.
Lahuia Hualpa, I want to thank you, executive director of the Workers Justice Project, which represents delivery workers. Thank you very much for joining us. Good to have you on again.
Thank you.
And listeners, we're going to continue with Councilmember Abreu briefly on another topic when we come back after a break. This one's going to be more universally popular, I think. Birth control for rats, which he's also proposing in a new bill in City Council. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A few more minutes with New York City Council Member Sean Abreu from Upper Manhattan, from Washington Heights down to the Upper West Side. And on another bill you're working on about the rat population in the city, is this your idea about feeding the rats tasty forms of birth control that work on both male and female rats?
It's certainly not my idea to invent birth control for rats, But it's certainly our idea to make sure that we establish a pilot program through legislation. We're really excited about the prospects. We know that two rats in a given year can reproduce 15,000 descendants. And so we can't get our way out of this by just killing rats. We gotta get to it at the source, Brian.
Why does this need to be a city council bill? Can't Mayor Adams Ratzar just decide to do it?
The council's job is to legislate. The mayor's job is to execute. There's nothing stopping the mayor from establishing a birth control program for rodents. But we're taking the initiative at the council through legislation.
And here is, I think, a constituent in your district who has a reaction to this. Leslie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Leslie.
Thank you. Councilman Abreu, I applaud what you're doing about the rats. I think it's absolutely fabulous. I have been in touch with people in your office who have been most attentive about a major problem on the Upper West Side at West 100th Street between Amsterdam and Columbus Avenues, where there is a 24th police precinct and a Fire Company 76, Ladder 22.
Leslie, I know you've been a caller on this issue before, and you know I used to live around there and we've talked, but I thought you were calling about the rats today.
I am calling about the rats. It's rats infested because you can't clean the garbage. It's very important that he be able to feed the rats birth control, but in addition, if you leave the garbage all over the street because you can't clean the street, you're just welcoming the rats to have food to eat.
So you're saying all the parking and double parking by the police and fire stations are impeding sanitation. Is that what you're saying?
Without a question, you cannot ever get this street cleaned. It is impossible. I have worked with the community relations people at both the police and the fire. In addition, now on Columbus Avenue from 97th to 100th Street, we have several big box stores where, although their garbage is picked up, their platforms where they receive the garbage are never swept out. So big garbage, but they never clean the floor.
Leslie, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you for drawing the council members' attention to that block. Lorraine in Westchester has a different take on birth control for rats, maybe a side effect. Is that right, Lorraine?
That's correct. Thank you, Brian. I'm a licensed wildlife rehabilitator with the Center for Wildlife, and I handle birds of prey, amongst other wildlife. And at least two times a year, I receive birds of prey, hawks, owls, et cetera, that have secondary poisoning from the rat, because rats are slowed down. They're not killed immediately because that protects, you know, other people. So it takes a couple of days. And during that time when they're slowed down, they're easy prey for the birds of prey. And poisoning is not the answer. I think birth control certainly is. Or you had a gentleman on a few months ago that talked about CO2.
Oh, so you're for the birth control because that means less rat poison. Am I understanding you correctly?
That's right. We need a smaller population and they wouldn't have to use as much poison.
Right. Very good. Thank you.
I can
Thank
respond you. To that, Brian.
Councilman, go ahead.
I mean, first of all, I'm excited that folks are excited about birth control for rats. And, you know, one of the main reasons we're also doing it, too, is that we realize that rodenticide just doesn't work. Right. The anticoagulants that are within rodenticide, rats have grown resistant towards it. And we know as well the impact that rodenticide can have on birds of prey, but also domestic animals like dogs. There was a case in Washington Heights where a dog died from rodenticide. Yeah. So it's an overall win at getting at the source of the problem, but also when you think about wildlife and domestic animals.
But we are getting texts about what I thought the caller in Westchester was going to say. This text says, all I want to know is, just like the rat poison passed through to kill Flacco, what's to stop birth control from passing through to birds of prey?
Sorry, what's the question?
The question is, what's to stop the birth control from passing through to owls and other birds of prey if they eat the rats that have taken birth control?
Yeah, so this has non-toxic substances. This will have no problem at all in terms of the impact it would have on passing it on. And is also, so that's my answer to that.
Non-toxic, but also it wouldn't cause the birds to be impaired from reproducing, you're saying?
Yes.
And on the effectiveness, a New York Times article notes that several generations of rat birth control dating all the way back to Governor Nelson Rockefeller's day have been tried and have failed. Why would this be any better?
Well, let me tell you how we have been changing our practices in terms of waste management. And that has a lot to do with why I think this will be effective. So there have been failed experiments for a very long time on birth control because rats have had extreme access to piles of trash that have been sitting out on the street. Remember, rats only need 1 ounce of food to survive any given day. But now that we're containerizing our trash, rats are more likely to eat the actual contraceptive. It's basically a sweet, salty, peanut buttery substance in a solid pellet form that rats would be attracted to. And that's why we would be introducing this rat birth control within the rat mitigation zone and within the areas where trash is containerized. Like in my district, we have containerization pilot and there's no bags of trash out on the street. So it increases the likelihood that rats will be eating the contraceptive, and that's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too, real quick, because we're almost out of time. Can you see a measurable difference in the rat population from your district having the containerization experiment rather than plastic bags?
Off the bat, Brian, there has been a 68% reduction in the first 3 months in rat sightings. So there has gone 311 complaints have gone down by 68%. And if you walk through West Harlem, it feels different. Everybody's taking pride in their neighborhood. Everybody is dropping off their trash on their way to work or after they get back from work. It's become a norm and a way of life even.
Last question on the birth control. Can you trust the male rats to actually take the birth control when they say they are? No, I'm just kidding. We will leave it there with New York City Council member Sean Abreu. We've talked about his bill on tipping. We've talked about his bill on birth control for rats. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.